Welcome to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. I want to thank our listeners from KEPW.org, FM station in Eugene, Oregon. I really appreciate you carrying our show. Today is Friday, April 27th, 2018, and honestly, I haven't even peeked out. I think it's kind of gray outside. I hope it's a good day. The weather's been really beautiful, of course. Since we have blue skies, we now get lines in the sky, too. So who knows what the weather really would be. But we want to thank you for joining us. It's Friday. This is kind of our review week. Jerome Hebert, my co-host, is with me on the air. Hi, Jerome. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Lonnie, and good morning, radio listeners.
Yeah. We've had quite a week. You know, yesterday was the marking of 32 years since Chernobyl has become a magnificent disaster. Let's just put it to you that way. They are installing the largest steel structure over Chernobyl once again because the sarcophagus that the Russians had put over Chernobyl has collapsed a few years ago it collapsed. So now they built the largest steel structure ever on the planet of the Earth covering up Chernobyl in the hopes that that will be okay for 50 years.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't count Fukushima. Like they're saying that Chernobyl's the worst disaster that's ever happened in the nuclear industry. While they're not counting on the fact that Fukushima, 8 years later, now has nuclear meltdowns that have been going on for 8 years, pouring, what do they say, 300 to 400 tons of radioactive contaminated waste into the Pacific Ocean. Daily.
Every day.
Right. So this is a welcome to our new reality. This is why people check out on this issue, because it is just so overwhelming. It's like everywhere you turn, there's just like another big mess. And the government has absolutely no accountability. The contractors who do this have no accountability. The people who work there have no accountability. It's beyond comprehension that we are allowing it.
Yeah. It's like housekeeping department, I think it was at Prairie Nuclear Facility in Minnesota, found when they were doing a fitness, they call it a fitness to operate test, where they do an on-site test for drugs and alcohol for employees. And they found one of those cheetah pee test fake fake penises with the little bladder and all and a heater. And so basically they're just faking their drug tests. So the operators are stoned, obviously, or on other drugs, you know. And I don't think twice about people who do drugs, but you know, I would not want somebody stoned running a power plant, a nuclear power plant. That's just silly.
I mean, you wouldn't want people smoking pot before they go to work at a nuclear power plant? Not even pot.
Not even pot.
Yeah, no. I think I'm with you on that one, too.
100% of your judgment ability right there, ready to go when you're in one of those plants, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm with you 100%. Because really, the thing is, they're so poorly built, you never know when it's going to fall apart. That's the problem.
And they are poorly built, you're right. It's terrible.
I don't know. I actually feel like, you know me, I mean, I think I said this last Friday. At what point are the masses, people are not even aware that they're really being poisoned. I mean, it's this idea that we know we're being poisoned by GMOs. We know that, right? We know we're being poisoned by the air. But to think about radioactivity and nuclear contamination, I think people in the back of their heads really believe that it's not that bad because they don't see the immediate effects. And when you go to the doctor and find out you have cancer, the doctor never says, oh, it's because you live next door to a nuclear power facility, or your child gets diabetes, or they're autistic. The diagnosis is never, there's never what could have caused this would be nuclear. Never. Those words don't even pop up. And if you happen to ask your doctor about it, you're likely to get hostility.
Yeah, and as well, I was yesterday covering an article that stated in many hospitals in the United Kingdom, actually a predominance, people die 20% to 25% of the time, depending on the hospital. Some of it goes as high as 48%. From the first round of chemotherapy, not their cancer. So what kills them is the chemotherapy, but what goes on the death certificate is cancer.
Yeah, I know. I've heard that. And actually, there's a group of doctors who actually absolutely refuse to use chemotherapy. There's a huge lot of doctors who say it's not worth it because they see, in fact, that statistic that people die. This is the interesting thing about that statistic. 20 to 25% of the people die from their first round of chemotherapy. What they don't tell you about is that most people subsequently die from their chemotherapy. You die. The chemotherapy, and it doesn't kill you right away. It doesn't kill you after your first round. But the majority of the people actually die from their chemotherapy because the dose is accumulative. So in 3 to 4 years, you've gotten your chemotherapy. You get a different kind of cancer. It's been caused by your chemotherapy, or your cancer comes back. That's, in fact, often what happens is the cancer returns. How does a cancer return if they really got rid of it using radioactive contamination? This is a thing I don't understand, Jerome.
Damage. That's what people need to understand it about. It's not like a cause and effect one-time thing where, oh, I got a dose of radiation, now I got cancer. Okay, good, I'm better from the cancer, life goes on. It's like your DNA is still damaged. Cells are still not going to be able to reproduce themselves accurately, and therefore you're going to get cancer. So it's not, you can't cure cancer because cancer is caused by DNA damage. And when you damage your DNA, it doesn't recover. It's not like every other thing on our body. DNA does, to a certain extent, heal itself, but once the code is broken enough to where you start having tumors, well, then the code is broken. You have to get new. You would have to literally remove and retransplant somebody's DNA with new, fresh DNA that actually works to stop the cancer. So cancer is a, I think it was initially, Bonnie, as a genetically and evolutionarily, it was a way to help control our population. A certain percentage of every population of critters and whatever they are, alive things, are going to get this. It's just DNA's way of purifying the gene pool. But, you know, we're intentionally damaging our own DNA. And once you do that, you're screwed. I mean, pardon my language, but you are. You know, there's nothing you can do to fix broken DNA. It's like putting a giant magnet on the hard drive of your computer. You know, and then when Windows won't, or whatever, doesn't boot up, going, well, maybe I can go in there and move around some, you know, maybe if I get rid of this or add some new code, maybe that'll make it work. But it won't, because the base thing is broken now.
Well, the base thing is you don't put what gave you cancer into your body. The idea of using radiation is absolutely insane. Dr. Circus has a really good whole article on this on Dr. Circus, SIRCUS.com. You and I both interviewed him. I mean, he literally has testimonials of people who have had prostate cancer saying, hey, I went through the normal radiation treatment and it wasn't working. My cancer was coming back. I talked to Dr. Circus and you know what? My cancer reversed. And it seems like a miracle. But these are actually, the thing is, the tools that Western medicine, especially the AMA, is using are tools to keep people sick. They're not tools to cure. That's the thing to understand. The AMA has no interest in curing diseases. They want to manage them because it's profitable. I mean, think of this nuclear industry, Jerome, how they can lie with impunity. They actually get encouraged. Like, their profit is by lying and cheating because they get these deadlines. The government gives them these salacious incentives to finish the work on time. So instead, like Mr. Truth told us, they rushed it, jimmy-rigged this nuclear power plant. So there was a difference between 1% paid or 2% interest paid. And so the company didn't want to have to spend that money, right? I mean, it was really, or get, they wanted to make the extra money. That's kind of the reverse. They wanted to make the extra money. So they're getting incentivized to lie to us. And there's no, the profit for them is in lying. And then when the people get sick, the doctors lie. The doctors do not, the doctors have been brainwashed and really conditioned, hyper-conditioned, to not even consider radioactivity as part of a concern because there have been no medical studies, because the IAEA controls all the medical studies, to be honest. And that is really where it's at. The IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, really is at the root of the evil, in my view.
Yeah, all of these alphabet soup agencies in our governments, though the initial idea for them was great, have evolved into evil, every single one of them. You know, you go right down the list and you find that there's abuse of power, there's lying, there's cheating. It just so happens with the nuclear stuff, that creates issues that last for generations and generations.
Well, it also really creates a war that is undisclosed. You know, I was listening to Jeremy Scahill yesterday on The Intercept on his podcast. Well, highly recommend TheIntercept.com, too. That is with Jeremy Scahill. They have weekly podcasts. They have stories. But he was talking about how, I think he said, what year was it? That the oversight of the CIA in 1947 or 57, they changed the rules. There used to be a lot of heavy-handed oversight, but then after that time, they basically created their own little internal government. That the Congress passed a law that said they were not accountable to anybody. So since then, they have not been accountable to anybody. And
they have,
you know,
not, but they are accountable to somebody. Okay, keep that in mind, that they are ultimately accountable to somebody. Somebody's in charge of all this. There is a bigger mind making these decisions behind the scenes. You know, the decisions, for instance, to use sub-quality fuel elements, MOX fuel elements. And by the way, that's what was running in the Fukushima reactor when it blew up, in Japanese reactors. You know, the French are building subpar fuel elements, nuclear fuel elements, and faking the quality control information on them.
Here we go again. Incentivized to lie. Exactly.
Right. And the Japanese take these fuel bundles and they go, okay, then. And, of course, TEPCO and the other electric companies, you know, what they're doing is they're doing a risk-to-benefit estimate is what they're doing. They're going, well, what is the chance that this fuel assembly, let's say it fails catastrophically, the half of the channels rupture and the fuel gets out into the water or into the steam environment, what are the chances that that is going to create a core meltdown? And they go, well, it may burn up a little spot in the core, but it's not going to cause a catastrophic meltdown. So we're not going to spend the $40 million to figure out how to do a mock steel bundle right in this instance. And
okay.
The power companies are certainly not going to pay us the extra that it's going to take to build this fuel bundle correctly. And the reason is because their customers, you and I, Lonnie, are not going to pay $500 a month for electricity, even though that's what it's worth.
I think people will pay $500 a month. I think that's not true. People will pay whatever. And I mean, I don't understand what you mean, even though that's what it's worth. You kind of got me off track on that one. What do you mean by that?
Electricity is the most precious commodity we have. Think about it. You couldn't do your job without electricity. I couldn't do mine. Your car wouldn't run. Our houses wouldn't heat. Electricity is the thing that makes our lives livable. Okay,
but that is a false. That's such a false.
People without electricity.
But there are ways to get electricity that's way cheaper than what we're doing it. A,
I agree.
And B,
I disagree
with that premise. I really disagree with the premise that the life would end. Our culture, you know, the things that we do, but the work that a lot of the work that we do would just change. But we could do it without electricity. I mean, we could generate electricity from the wind, from the sun. We don't need nuclear power. We don't actually need. There's a lot of things that we could do without. I mean, we could change this. And in fact, when this all comes to a head and collapses, we will see. We're going to have mass death, but we're going to have a lot of people who will survive, and we're going to figure it out. Because humanity does not need electricity. We don't need this modern age. This is the part of my issue here. In fact, last night I did a YouTube video for the first time in quite a while. Part of the reason I haven't is like even this radio show, we're part of the chatter. You know, like the overkill of information. There's just so much out there. How do you know what's real? How do you know what's based on facts and reality? And how do you know that it's there just to manipulate you? It's kind of like, you know, we're talking about the cost. So check this out. I went to the IAEA page while you were just talking about them. And on April 26th, now this is on the IAEA.org, the official site of the International Atomic Energy Agency. April 26, 2018. This is hilarious. The IAEA hosted its first ever in how long? Technical meeting on nuclear power cost estimation in Vienna. Now, how
in
long
who?
Have they
Vienna?
In Vienna? In Vienna is their home? That's where they live in Vienna. That's where Kevin Blanche went to Vienna. He protested in Vienna. They were having spent fuel pool conference there, and Kevin wanted to go, and he stood outside and protested.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when he went to Europe. But this is the thing. This is what blew me away about this article. How long have they been in? How long has the IAEA been doing this? And they're hosting their first ever technical meeting on nuclear power cost estimation. You know why they're doing it? Because these greedy pigs have been doing this for so long, digging in everybody's pockets, and now people are going, forget it. Nuclear is not worth it. It's way too expensive because of these negative incentives, right? So it's
right.
Just
hello?
Hi, I had to mute the phone. The phone rings at 8 o'clock now. Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah.
People think I start my business at 8 o'clock. No, I don't actually. So, you know, I don't know, Jerome. The thing is, we have lived our lives, you know, our children and our grandchildren, they won't, like us, we didn't know anything else. We've always had, we're the first nuclear generation.
What do you mean by that? You mean the first generation of people who were around when they had nuclear power?
Well, not just nuclear power. We're the first generation of nuclear testing. They started the testing in the 40s and the 50s. I mean, our generation, the baby boomer generation, is the nuclear bomb testing generation, the first one ever. And
yeah,
so
we did get blasted harder than any other generation that we know of, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that would include Chernobyl and Three Mile Island and all of the other leakage and all of the other radio medicine, which is putting huge amounts of radiation.
Yeah.
You know, most of the NRC's event notification reports are actually about medical incidences, Lonnie. You know, I read one last week where a radioisotope source, that they keep it in a lead box and they put it where they want it to irradiate, and then they just drop this stuff through a metal tube, and it just irradiates the area, and then they pull it back into the, with the wire, back into the metal box. Well, apparently, this poor patient was on the bed getting radio treatment for cancer, and their source just got stuck in the guide tube, they call it.
Oh,
and that means that it couldn't, and for like 20 minutes,
wow,
this guy ended up getting 6 rads in his thighs, or her thighs. And it could have been a child, for all we knew.
Wow.
That's the kind of incidences that we're seeing. We're seeing Tom, Dick, and Harry, Joe Doctor, Joe Radiologist, going, oops, did I overdose share? Oops, did I underdose share? Oops, what? I thought the source was back in the tube. You know, stuff like that.
You know what's really bad about that? The technology is faulty, right? Just the machinery, the way they use this faulty machinery. And yet the people administering, imagine how that doctor and all the nurses in the room felt. Imagine all the people that were assisting him, everyone along the line. They know that. In fact, this is part of my issue with the American Murder Association. It's this very same thing. All the way along the line, they're all complicit. Like, attempt to go to a hospital and talk to a nurse and say, I want to talk to my doctor. You're not going to get the doctor. He's not coming in. He might give you 30 seconds. He does not have time for you. It's not on his schedule.
Right. So is that your phone?
Yes, and there's no muting my phone, you guys. I apologize for that. But unless the phone is right there, maybe I'll just go get it, and if it rings again, I'll mute it right away. But you'll still hear it.
Well, yeah. I can sit here in Babylon.
Okay, Babylon.
Yeah. So, indeed, folks, Solani's going and getting her phone. We're being dosed and dosed and dosed. If you're in your 30s to 60s right now, pretty much your whole life you've been getting dosed, and unnecessarily. They give us cancer, and then they give us more of a dose to get rid of the cancer, which, of course, wouldn't cause ever cancer, and they're going to be certainly professional about it. They would never give us 6 rads by mistake, would they?
Yes, they would, as a matter of a fact. They would do that by mistake. Yes,
imagine the radiation burns on that person's skin, inside of their muscles, their bones. See, that's what I think people don't understand about radiation and how it burns you. It burns. It doesn't just burn like a sunburn. I got a radiation burn. No, the cells under that, and the muscles are burned, and the bones are burned, and the bone marrow is burned. And the blood cells that were in that area are burned. Burned, Lonnie. Like, you know, the worst possible sunburn you could imagine? Imagine that going all the way through your, not just skin, but your muscles, and even feeling it in your bones. And you think you don't have nerves in your bones? Guess again. You know, we need to get away from all of this. And there is an inevitability that says it's never going to happen. We're going to probably end up killing ourselves off with it. And that's just so sad. because humans are so beautiful in so many ways. You know, we have capability to be such incredible creatures if we cultivate that within ourselves. Unfortunately, we're not really doing that. So that's why I speak out every day, is because it's important not to give up on me. It's important to do the right thing because it's just the right thing to do. You know, when somebody's offers to let you do a half a job, say okay, and then go ahead and do the whole job anyway, because that's what you should be doing. You should be doing the whole job. You should be finishing it completely.
You and I are not in positions to where we can create the solutions, but our positive thoughts and our positive energy and our efforts and creates the space for that energy to be invented. I actually think that there are solutions. I've talked to people that have talked about solutions that are out there that are actually being repressed. They're literally, it's almost as if there's murder by design on this nuclear whole target. That's, I guess, to me, this is why I think the geoengineering and the nuclear contamination, they have known with nuclear weapons and with nuclear, there's been enough scientific study from way back. We don't need another scientific study to tell us it's harmful to human health. What we need is honest answers. Like the doctors in Japan are now not allowed to really diagnose their patients from Fukushima with cancer. They're being told, you know, it's other things, or the parents are being told it's stress. I read that article the other day about how the diabetes is being caused by their change in diet and their change of lifestyle. The denial
because of the meltdown of the power plant.
The question is, Jerome, how do we change that paradigm? I guess that's what you and I, you know, what we want to do is change the paradigm. We want to change the conversation because the nuclear industry has had control over the conversation for a long time. It's 32 years of Chernobyl, and most people think Chernobyl stopped and that Chernobyl's okay. We had Three Mile Island very recently, last month, right? So, I mean, we've got Fukushima's not stopped. Three Mile Island, not stopped. Chernobyl, not stopped. You know, when they had the nuclear meltdown in Santa Susana, you know what they did? It wasn't a China syndrome. It was a real nuclear meltdown. They released the radioactivity all over Simi Valley, all over Los Angeles. And people and the people who were making movies and all that stuff out there, all those people died of cancer. And then it was blamed on them smoking cigarettes and their raucous lifestyle of drinking and carousing.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's time for that paradigm to end, though. I think it's really, really time to end. I think it's got to stop. We have got to take time.
They're going bankrupt. The guys that are building these plants are going bankrupt, and they're too expensive to run anymore because of all the regulation and because of the danger level. So the fact that they're too expensive to run, your dollar per kilowatt hour energy matrix changes, and so all of a sudden it doesn't become profitable, and it becomes actually a burden because now we're stuck with the spent fuel from all these years and years and years. There's over 1 million pounds of spent fuel, or what was it? God, it was so many tons of spent fuel at San Onofre. I was blown away by it. There are still huge pools of radiated fuel sitting at the Hanford site that they haven't done anything with. You know, so there's tons and tons of this stuff around that we haven't even got any idea how to deal with. And seemingly, there isn't a will on the part of the government to figure something out. They came up with a couple of ideas, and they're going with them, whether they're going to work or not. You know, think the whip, you know, which has been proven to be loaded with faults and groundwater and all kinds of issues, you know. But did they try to stop and go, okay, we can't do that then? oops, we spent $47 billion, and oops, ended up with a big cave system. Time to move on. You know, the whole thing will fill itself in, and you'll find a new place. But we aren't. You know, we are shipping radioactive waste to the waste isolation pilot plant. They're just able to put it into the parts that aren't totally contaminated yet.
Well,
I don't think the workers aren't going to be sick all this later.
Well, it's also still collapsing. They didn't resolve the issue. Those are salt domes. It's not being done. It's the contamination. This is really not a solution. And this is the thing. I don't want to say we are shipping it. We have no, we, like you and I, us, the people. It's the military. It's the government. It is. It's that system that is, it's like out of control. Let's just put it to you that way. I mean, Mike Pompeo, let's be clear. In America, Mike Pompeo, it has been appointed as Secretary of State. And John Bolton is Trump's advisor. And what's that lady's name that's trying to get through? Kathy, I forget her name, but she was like the Graham. I think that's the wrong name, though. I could probably find it in a heart second. But, you know, she was a woman who oversaw the waterboarding and thought that waterboarding is fine. So we have a government that is really bent and positioning itself on assaulting the world. And that is exactly what the nuclear industry, this is why, you know, the nuclear industry is really, they're looking for a renaissance in this new time, because they really believe that the money that this is their money, they are entitled to it. And we have to give it to them if we want to be protected.
Exactly. Yeah, our government has not represented us since they came up with nuclear power.
Not at all.
Since they had the first nuclear bomb, as of the Manhattan Project, our government became a corrupted, evil thing. Not bent upon the productivity and health and goodness of the citizens, but on the death of other citizens. And, we're keeping them safe by killing them. They're not even smart enough to begin to understand what we're really doing for them. Okay. This is the kind of nihilistic behavior that has caused governments to fail and countries to go away over and over again, and it will happen again. You know, people think of the great and mighty United States, which has been around for a speck of time and could be disintegrated very quickly. You know, if you took out Houston, Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago, okay, that would be it. No more United States. It would be gone. The government might try to control it, but every soldier would drop his gun and go straight for his family if he could find them. It would be gone. Every cop, every fireman, everybody, every paramedic, every doctor, they're going to go and they're going to take care of them and theirs. And the government will quickly cease to be. And I don't think people understand that we aren't really that great and mighty, and we have not been around for that long.
Jerome, I disagree with you 100% on that. 100%. I guarantee you they have an alternative plan. We have the greatest military on the planet. We have more military might. You think that would not be turned on our people to get us into line if our country got attacked? If we lost Washington, D.C. and New York and Los Angeles, somebody was to do a targeted effort. Oh, Houston, they took out, let's say, four huge cities. You think we would not have militarized police and people rounding us up and saying who's doing what and who's doing what and getting us? And we'd all be scared. Most Americans would be so scared they'd be handing the cops their identification. Please help me. Here I am. Check me out. I'm safe. Please take me to the FEMA camp. I need clean water to help me and my kids get into the FEMA camp. Make room for us.
Right.
That's what would happen. We are big, and not us. We, the people of the United States. Fortunately, this is like on the upside of that. This is why it's good that people in the United States have not given up their weapons. And we do have people with pretty high-powered weapons, because it is, you know, if that were to happen, and God forbid, I hope it doesn't. To me, the more likelihood is not that a nuclear facility, you know, a nuclear bomb would happen, but more likely some gigantic earthquake's going to happen, and we're going to have a string of earth nuclear facilities on the West Coast that collapse, like, within a very short period of time of each other. That is a greater
scenario. And also in Europe, too. You know, a lot of the European facilities are old, and a lot of them are also graphite cores.
Are they sitting on top of earthquake faults?
Well, what happens is the graphite degrades over that many years of being irradiated, and it becomes brittle, and it starts cracking, and it'll literally just crumble. I mean, if it gets a good bang, it'll shatter like glass. And so these fuel rods and the whole core is basically suspended by these graphite bricks. And if the graphite bricks just shatter, if there's a small earthquake even, you know, the one in Ireland right now, or Scotland, you know, they inspected it and they found the bricks were cracked, and even a design-based earthquake, one that this facility was designed to be able to handle, could very well cause the core to completely, basically, turn into a pile of dust with the fuel rods and everything right in there, and there would be no way to get control rods in. The reaction would continue. There would be no way to cool it. The reaction would get, I don't know if it would get super critical, but it would get enough to have another Chernobyl incident very quickly. You know, and boom, and there you go. You know, it wouldn't take much to take out a lot of our, on the planet. A lot of facilities are old, old, old. They're 60, 70 years old. They've been getting irradiated since the 40s and the 50s.
Well, that was my point here. I think they are taking out a lot of our planet. I mean, birds are falling from the sky. Animals are dying. Mass animal deaths are happening. Cancer rates among human children is the number one cause of death of children in the United States. I mean, it is taking us out. I mean, the thing is, this is an undeclared war. This is undeclared, but the death rate is just as bad.
It seems like it, huh?
Sure
does.
But I
just can't understand why that would happen. There has to be some kind of a bigger thing going on behind it. Why? Who's at war with us, and why?
I mean, to me, it's pretty evident they want to cull the population. I mean, that's, you know, they want to whack down the human population. They're using us as lab rats. They get to experiment on us. They're hoping for eternal life, or ways to discover, you know, to keep their little lives and their little families in perfect health. And, you know, they can insulate themselves, or so they think. I mean, this is the ironic part, with no regard for the magnificent beauty of our planet or each other. Every single life is precious.
Yes, every single life is precious. But what the nature of life on Earth is that the reason that every single life is so precious is because they are so easily extinguished.
Yeah.
You go from alive to dead just like that. Boom, it's done. And once you're there, that's it. You know? So, yeah, life is precious. We only have one round, Lonnie, that we know of. You know,
well,
you can have all the faith
of
in
life
the world.
Too.
Well, you can have all the faith in the world that you're going to heaven, or you'll be reborn, or your spirit lives on, but you don't really know. You know? You don't really know. At the moment of your death, you don't know. And then you're dead. And who knows? And then who knows? It could just be like going under anesthesia. You know, I don't know if you've ever done that, but when they did this back operation on me, you guys are putting me under, and the next thing I know, I'm waking up in a recovery room going, what happened? Oh, yeah,
yeah.
You went under, and like I was just gone for hours and hours. There was nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what happens in surgery. We have stories of people who have passed. You know, there's mediums that can talk to, that see dead people, you know, people that can talk to people who are stuck in between. I mean, we do know somewhat that there is something, that there's an energy force, something happens after we pass. Our lives, we are really literally a spiritual being in a physical body. That yeah. part we've been able to figure out, right? So the question is, how do we live to our greatest potential? How do we live to our fullest? That's what's being lost, is our humanity, our sense of love and humanity for each other. I think it's kind of sad the way it's people have just given up. You know, it's, and yet I have talked to people who say, look, I'm not giving up. I just can't, I'm not taught, I can't face dealing with it because there is nothing we can do. It's absolutely a big fat zero. We can jump up and down. Look at all Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear, Kevin Camps, Tom Carpenter. These are the people like Dr. Edward Gordon up in Canada. I mean, they've made substantial impact in helping stop the contamination. But have they been able to really change the culture of polluting for profit? No. I mean, really, no.
There isn't a lot of will for that, Lonnie.
I don't think there's a lot of awareness of it. People don't realize just how salacious the nuclear industry is in their lives. Like I said earlier, they're incentivized to cheat and to lie. They get incentives, like Mr. Truth told us, you know. They were beating a deadline. It was a difference in several million dollars to them one day. So why do our elected officials, why does the government create these types of salacious contracts incentivizing people to lie and cheat, especially after we see that that's the result that they're doing? It's one thing.
That is also human nature in some ways. You know, to take the easiest route to the end, you know, that's human nature. So
that's the lower part of human nature. But Jerome, there's two parts of human nature. Why do we have to encourage the lower part of human nature? Why can't we encourage the higher parts of human nature?
And I'm with you on that, Lonnie. That's why I do what I do. That's why I'm this activist. Because I'm encouraging the higher parts of human nature. I'm trying to educate people and expand their awareness so that they're able to take action. That's, you know, and will it make a difference in the big picture? Will it stop anything? Will it stop them from visioning a single fuel bundle? Probably not, but it doesn't matter. You know, my humanity insists that I at least try to educate people.
Well, see, I think it does matter, and I think it will stop them. I think the force of all of us speaking out and doing this, the force of that will change them and change their minds about participating. It's like people that are slowly coming out of the nuclear industry who are saying, you know, I just don't feel that good about being told that I can't talk about this or being told that I need to change this. The problem is they have such power that they can control people's careers and keep them from getting hired even outside of the nuclear industry.
Right. Yeah.
And
they
use it.
They can infiltrate your social media. They can make your entire life miserable, you know. They can go after your family. They can go after your kids. You know, you're, for instance, a worker at a nuclear plant, and you uncover some bad thing and report on it, and then all of a sudden your teenage daughter starts getting tons of people on all of her social media making up lies and stories and making her life miserable, and your son as well. He can't even go to Facebook anymore.
You mean the online bullying? Yeah, I mean,
yeah, and, look, right, and at school, and well, no,
you don't even have to work there. Look what happened to Glenn Woodford. Glenn Woodford was protesting outside of the Paducah processing plant, Paducah, Kentucky. He was at a social gathering, and somebody who was there casually came up to him and said, "I've heard about you," and basically threatened him and said, "If you and your family want to be safe, you'll just stop doing that." And this was a person who worked there because that's his income. So it doesn't have to be the government, you know, the enforcers of the people who work there who feel threatened, kind of like in Germany. I mean, this is really the mindset. I honestly said this to Thomas Ackerman about 3 years ago, that World War II never ended. They just infiltrated the United States government. It's just beyond comprehension. It's I don't know. So then that's the question. How do we, you know, will more facts matter? I mean, it's good to look at data charts, reading all these stories. Yesterday was this, check this out, in the New York Times, which is kind of a right-wing rag in my view, I mean a left-wing rag, still flying an 86 Ukrainian pilot who survived Chernobyl disaster. Interestingly enough that the Times decides to talk about a pilot, an 86-year-old man, who now, but basically what this does as an unconscious level is let you think that, gosh, if the pilot could go in there and he's still okay, then it must not be that bad. So get what I'm saying? They're not. There is no story about the ongoing medical disaster that's happening in Chernobyl or the out-of-control wild animals that's in the Chernobyl area or the radioactivity that is still emanating from it or the collapse of the sarcophagus and the cost to the people of Russia, of putting up the largest steel dome ever built in the history of humanity is over Chernobyl.
Yep.
You should take a look at it. It's huge. It's thick. It's gigantic. It's huge. And they're crossing their fingers it's going to work. They don't know it's going to work.
Well, you know, one thing you can say about the Russians, when I was doing my investigation last week of where nuclear power plants are located on the planet, ironically enough, Russia really has no commercial nuclear industry at all. There are no, if you look at the map, I think it's on the IAEA's website of worldwide nuclear power, you look at Russia, and Russia is devoid of nuclear power plants. Commercial, they don't use nuclear power commercially. I think they might have one or two in the entire country, and it's huge. It's like bigger than the United States for sure. So pretty much I would imagine, even and ironically enough, probably one of the most nuclear safe places on the planet is Central Russia. The Central Plains of Russia, probably background there is low, 0.01 microsieverts versus 0.10 microsieverts here, you know, or 0.4 microsieverts in Colorado, on the Colorado Plateau. I've gotten as high as 0.6 in Denver, which is still a tiny dose, but it's, for background, that's pretty high, you know. So, I don't know, Ronnie.
I don't think 0.6 is a tiny dose. Do you know what it used to be? You know what the level was pre-Fukushima that was considered dangerous?
What?
It was considered 0.10.
Microsieverts?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And then Fukushima happened,
well,
and they changed it to one.
Time,
then they changed it to 1.0. So it's actually,
okay.
They have increased it. It basically went up by 26,000 times. The level that they allowed us to handle is exponentially, grotesquely worse. And we're only in year 8 of Fukushima, year 32 of Chernobyl. You know what I mean? And the untold amounts of years with other facilities that we have not really been told the truth of what's wrong. Check out Hanford, for example. And these all, every one of these, this is why this is a grave concern. You know, I called Pete DeFazio's office. Louisa Hamacek and I are going to really start lobbying our local politicians to shut down the Columbia Generating Station. I called Pete DeFazio's office. They said, I have to write a letter to request an appointment, because I said, I'd like to talk to somebody in your office and show you some documentation. They said, well, you have to write a letter before you can get an appointment. Okay. So you can't call your congressman's office and say, I'd like to make an appointment to come in. You have to write a letter, at least in ours. So that slows down the train. But, you know, there is absolutely no consciousness of how completely dangerous Columbia Generating Station is. Louisa and I were talking about it. We both feel kind of like, I don't know, we've dropped the ball. We used to call the Bonneville Power Administration, who runs it. They won't answer our phone calls. They don't talk to you. You know, the activists that are actively engaged in this are not allowed to go in the building. I mean, they, and you were the one who said to me, you don't think they're going to close the Columbia Generating Station.
Well, if it's not blowing up, probably they're going to try to keep it open. Do they have plans to close it?
Well, it's mandated to close if it doesn't run a profit, and it's losing $500 million a year. Every single person who gets electricity from Columbia Generating Station pays more money for their electricity because it's losing money. We have to pay to keep it open. Like, my bill is about $60 a month higher because of the Columbia Generating Station.
Is it? I didn't know that, because that's in Washington. We're in Oregon.
We get 4% of our power comes from there.
Holy mackerel.
Yes, yes. So, and the way they built the Columbia Generating Station, they built a consortium of utility companies. I think there are 59 of separate ones, 59 separate utility companies from all around the Northwest. And they all get electricity from a variety of sources, and they tied the Columbia Generating Station into as being one of them. And they're actually mandated to use it unless their local people say they don't want it. Right?
Really?
So, yes, there's been big pushes to try to get that to stop, but the utility boards won't stop doing it because they get a financial incentive to use the electricity. So we can have Louisa Hamacek on. She has been very active in getting, or Karen Mercer. I forget her last name anyways, but there's two people that I've met in Oregon who can actually, who have actually really been active in doing, attempting to do this. And those two people are now, they're blocked from entering the Bonneville Power Administration building. They're told they can't go in there. Yes. So this is how it goes. And this is why people check out, because it's like brute force. This is what I, when you said, if we have these big catastrophes, we're going to be on our own. No, it's going to get, we are already militarized and people don't even realize it. Attempt to get a nuclear power facility shut down. The military will come down your neck so hard.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
I mean, look what happened with the pipelines. Look what's going on. They're building pipelines all over, and there are water resistors. The Native American people have really, you know, they are protesting. They're out there. They're trying to block them, but try is the key word in that effort. They are not blocking them. You know, anytime you try to do something means you're going to fail, and they are failing, just like the anti-nuclears. They've been failing us because we haven't found the strategy that will stop this insanity. It's, I mean, maybe it's going to take mass deaths. What do you think?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's going to take. All at once. You know, we're already having mass deaths, but I mean, mass deaths all at once, in a way that you can actually say, oh, cause and effect here, you know. But, you know, if, you know, another Chernobyl-level event in the United States would shut down nuclear power in the United States, Lonnie. People just wouldn't be having it anymore. If the Columbia Generating Station totally destroyed, blew up, and flambasted parts of Seattle and Portland, Oregon, and made, you know, several hundred square miles of area out there uninhabitable for the next 10,000 years.
I don't think you
and
get
it. Literally evacuate.
No, that is not. That's not just what would happen. You don't understand what would happen. If something critical.
I do understand what would happen, honey. Come on.
No, you know. No, you know what would happen? Hanford would blow up. Hanford would blow up, and it's bye-bye North America. Bye-bye Northern Hemisphere.
You underestimate what is there, Ronnie. I wasn't talking about Hanford. I'm talking about the Columbia Generating Station.
No.
Is that reacting Hanford, in a Chernobyl-like way? It wouldn't listen, take the rest of Hanford with me. It wouldn't. Yes, I know it wouldn't. Yes, I'm not even going to argue with you about it.
Jerome, what would happen is nobody could get into the Hanford site to tend to those piles of contamination that need 24-hour maintenance. We have crews on Hanford that are working 24 hours in small piles of contaminated nuclear waste that needs to be tended 24 hours a day. If something happened at the Columbia Generating Station, it's a little bit more than 15 miles away, the zone of contamination would be too great to get into Hanford. And after 72 hours, Hanford would turn into a big ball of fire that nobody could ever shut down. And not only that, it would, the blowing up might actually create an earthquake. It could get but just having Hanford blow up, it would cause a fire that and nuclear contamination that would blow east, that would contaminate the entire northern hemisphere. To be honest, Hanford is the, this is what makes the Columbia Generating Station the most dangerous nuclear power plant in our country, is its proximity to Hanford. That's what I mean. I don't think that Columbia Generating Station would cause Hanford to blow up, but what it would do is prevent anybody from getting into Hanford to work on it for at least 2 weeks, okay, because the site would be too hot. And then Hanford would blow up because nobody can go in there. It's less than 15 miles away. If there's a nuclear contamination, anybody that goes within 25, 30 miles will be dead in a very short period of time. Period. You have to get away from there. You cannot stay in there if there's a criticality. Look, it took 2 weeks for people to go back in there at Fukushima. And that is exactly what would happen at Hanford, right? People would say, well, we can't go back to work for 2 weeks. And Richland would probably be evacuated, yes. But what would happen is they don't have the robots. They don't have the ability to maintain the 24-hour work. It could cause a criticality that is untold. That's why I think the Columbia Generating Station needs to be shut down immediately.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I could 100% support that.
It's the fact. That's why
But if it did melt down, it would not take North America with it. But it would cause a cascade of events that could take North America with it.
That's right.
Thank you for clarifying that, Lonnie.
I'm sorry
that I got so argumentative.
That's all right, because really this is how people think. No, it wouldn't. But yes, we forget about the elephant in the room, which is Hanford and its this was the insanity, its proximity to Hanford. It's completely insane. It's way too close. If they had built it 20 miles away farther and it was only like 35 miles away, okay. Maybe because there's a 50-mile zone. You know, you can at 35 to 50 miles, you don't have much time, but you could get in there and get some work done. Wow, you know what? I see that the time is escaping here as we've got less than a minute left.
Wow.
So, Jerome, this has been a...
All right, Lonnie.
Thanks. Thank you for our listeners for joining us on Friday on these Friday reviews where me and Jerome are going to be on the air together talking about things like this. And hopefully one of us will be able to figure out this Skype thing. Unfortunately, we're both not heavy on the techno stuff. So we do have some technical issues on this show, which flying by the seat of our pants, we're attempting to figure it out. So we really do appreciate it. Thank you, KEPW, for sharing our radio show with your listeners. Listen to Jerome Hebert, the sane environmentalist. My name is Lonnie Clark. My YouTube channel is called Nuts for Art. Please dig in your pockets and make a contribution to UCY.TV. Talk to you guys on Monday. Put your courage feet on.